My mornings are chaos. I need coffee that works as hard as I do. That's why I drink Everyday Dose, coffee with benefits. It's rich, delicious coffee boosted with mushrooms, collagen, and nootropics. Everything I need for focus and balance. Ready in 30 seconds. Right now, get 61% off your first coffee plus starter kit and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/podcast or use code podcast at checkout.
Welcome to the Psychobetical Podcast. It's been a long time. I know. Has it been a year or something? It's a good way to get your listeners up just by not doing any podcasts. So hello, yes, it's me. I'm still alive, Handicap Patrick, and I've run upstairs. I was like, I've been trying to do this podcast for a very, very long time, and every time I start doing it, like something, there's like a child outside or there's some shite going on. So there's a buzzing or something. So I keep starting it and then not doing it, and I've been doing that for a very long time. So I do apologize. I've been getting every now and again a random email from someone saying like, please do the podcast or something I've got nothing to talk about. That's the only problem. Like my life is so boring, and there's nothing wrong with a boring life though. And your lives are probably boring as well. That's why you listen to this podcast. If you're living up in Las Vegas with loads of prostitutes and, you know, mafia hitmen and stuff, you're probably not listening to podcasts. Maybe you are, I don't know. So I thought what I would do, I would just quickly, I need to go somewhere. I've been away for a year, you know, from podcasting, and I'm already saying like I can't talk. I'm not going in a minute. So I thought I'd like answer a few questions, because I thought that's a good way of doing these things. I didn't actually find out the questions. I'm just like scrolling down trying to find them. I'm just going to answer a couple of. I'll just have to make them up. I'll make them questions up. They are real questions. I can't bother finding them. So I guess I should do some waffle before I start, just out of tradition. Where am I going? I am because it's a new year. Happy New Year, Happy Christmas. I hate when people say Happy New Year, don't you? Like, it's like Happy New Year. It's like, Happy New Year. Yeah, whatever. I don't know why. I think it's like when I used to work in a shop, I used to hate it when people always said, like, you know, how are you? You know, like, how are you? And I would never answer. And then they'd always be like, good, good. As in, they thought, you know, they just thought I'd said, how are you? I didn't say anything, so it's a bit like that with New Year. It's always a bit like, and how was your Christmas? How was your New Year? It's like, oh God, who bloody cares? So how was my New Year? I think I went to bed at like, usually I don't like enforced happiness or enforced like jollity. You know, like, you've got to have a good time. And if you don't have a good time, you're going to have a shit time, because you're going to be thinking, I should be having a good time, and I'm not. I'm having a shit time, and I'll make it even more shit. So I just have a shit time, and then I'm like, I'm happy. That's what I aim for. I usually watch Harry Potter. and then go to bed about 10:30 or something, and then all these bloody fireworks going off. Anyway, so I went somewhere. I went to Wicklow, County of Wicklow, where there was no fireworks, so it was that was good. So I could go to bed 10:30, and there was no noise, so that was good. So Harry Potter. But my wife had watched Harry Potter recently, so we didn't watch that. I don't even watch anything since she went to bed. So yeah, I don't like New Year. Christmas is okay if you got kids. if you're not, you might just like blow your brains out or something. Or go to Las Vegas with some prostitutes. So yeah. What else did I do? I've been really ill. I know. I don't like saying that because people think you're dying or you got cancer or something. No, I just had like the flu. This is a bit of advice. You know that that song Sunscreen, where it says always floss? Like, I completely agree with that statement, and also include and clean your teeth at the same time. Because I think being a British person, like my brother's married to a Canadian, and she always says that all British people look like Austin Powers. And I think that's probably true. If you look at pictures of like Kenton Cool and Chris Bonington, like, I guess mountaineers get it even worse because I think mountaineers are just a bit grubby. I bet triathletes and people have like really fucking great teeth, but they're amazing. Like Irish people have good teeth. I think mainly because they have them all pulled out when they're young. They've all got like plastic teeth. Now that's what they used to do in the olden days. Apparently, when you got married, you got all your teeth pulled out, so you went to bed into your husband if you had bad teeth. So, So I think I went through long periods of my life where I probably didn't clean my teeth enough or at all. And because what was the point, you know? And because my teeth are like terrible anyway. So I didn't clean my teeth enough. And then recently, because I'm in Ireland, I went to the dentist. I'd been there. I'd been within 7 years. I'd been before, so it wasn't that bad. So I went in, and the dentist was like, you know, nurse, the screens. And code 5, and all these lights started flashing, and she was like, I can't even see any teeth in there. And so he was like, oh, you need to go and see I never had any problems with my teeth though. So I had to go and had like 4 sessions with the what's it called, it the person who cleans your teeth, not the dentist, like the lesser dentist, the hygienist. And basically she was kind of like got like a chisel, and she's like chiseling all the plaque off and all that kind of stuff. But it's a bit like an old yacht, an old boat. Often what keeps it all together is all the rust, and if you get rid of the rust, there's nothing there. So my teeth were a bit like that. So once she'd got rid of all the plaque, then I started having loads of problems with my teeth. So that's so basically just clean your teeth, and then you don't have to, won't have any plaque. And also get an electric toothbrush. I know you won't listen to this if you're young, because like young people don't listen to this kind of stuff. But like, my mum had false teeth. She was neglected as a child. She had false teeth, and she hated it, and she was always really embarrassed about having false teeth, and you know, hated, you know, the idea of anyone seeing with a false teeth, and was like awful for her. So she tried to, you know, get it into us, like, clean your teeth, look after your teeth, but you just ignore it. You know, ignore stuff that people like that, old people say. Anyway, so ignore this as well. So once I'd had my teeth all sort of looked amazing. No, they didn't really look amazing. They looked like shit, but they were like less plaque. They were like, you know, looked like someone had like hit me in the face with a brick or something. My teeth are all like all over the place, but at least they looked, you know, okay. So anyway, but then I started getting like toothaches all the time because of the plaque had all disappeared, and so then I was like, I'll have to have a. Then they were like, I'll have to have a filling. So he gave me this filling, and it was like, for some reason, it had gone from like not being needing a filling to being like, oh, you had to have a root canal because it's so bad. I'm like, I didn't even have any warning. Like, anyway, so he gave me this filling, and he was like, oh, that's, you know, you might have to have a root canal. That's quite a deep filling. It's going to be quite sore and sensitive. I was like, sounds like me. And so I went away, and not long afterwards, I got the flu. Well, COVID, but we call it the flu these days. I got the flu, and it was like pretty, you know, pretty bad. Like, I thought I was dying, you know, that kind of, it's like, this is not, usually with the flu, you don't feel like you're going to die. And it was so bad, at one point, my son came in, and he climbed out the window, and he sort of traversed on the outside of the window and came in, like, the other window, you know. And I didn't do anything about it. I was just, like, laid there, thinking I was dying. And then he got the flu, and he couldn't do that anymore, so he was laid up. And then, anyway, the two kids had the flu, and I had the flu. And then the second my wife started getting the flu, I kind of had this miraculous recovery. And for 2 days, I was like, Mr. Like, do you want some more Benylin? Do you want some, you know, night nurse? All that kind of stuff, like a real proper caring person. But then once she recovered, then I kind of went to relapse. And then I had some kind of, I know this is really boring me talking about my my medical issues. Then I got like a sinus infection and horrendous toothache, like to the point I thought I was going to die. And oh, it was like terrible. So I had that was my, so I've not really done anything for like quite a long time. Just been like, and my tooth is still, I don't know if there's any dentists out there, I don't want any like second opinions, but I ended up going back to the dentist and I was like, I think I'm dying. And I couldn't tell if it was the flu, the COVID, I had brain cancer or something, but he gave me some penicillin and it got rid of everything apart from the pain, which is the problem because everything else wasn't that bad. The pain was the worst bit. So now I've still got pain, but it's not all the time. So I'm hopefully the all the time will become none of the time rather than more of the time. More of the time wouldn't be very nice because every now and again I get like the most intense pain. And I'm always thinking like, I don't know if you've ever seen Marathon Man, where Oliver, what's his name, thingy? Oliver, not Oliver Reed. Anyway, Laurence Olivier, where he's like drilling holes into Dustin Hoffman's teeth. I'm often thinking like, is this as bad as that? I don't know. But it feels as if this is as bad as that. But it only lasts for like a few hours and it goes away. No, it lasts for like 10, 20 minutes and then it just kind of goes away. And it's probably to do with drinking hot drinks or drinking cold drinks or having your mouth open and the air being more than 37 degrees. So I went in a sauna the other day and my tooth started hurting. And then I went outside and my tooth had 10 because it was like below freezing. So I can't really win, really. So, yeah, being in a sauna. Yeah, I have. Do you know, I think the last time I did a podcast, I was probably talking about like ripping my bicep. And so my training life seemed to get knocked on the head a bit with that kind of thing. So I've not done much training for quite a long time. So just basically been focusing on getting really fat. And I made this mistake of I started thinking like, instead of doing training and eating whatever I want, I'm just going to stop training and I'm just going to do intermittent fasting, as in I'll just have one meal every day. And it worked really well. And the only problem with it, my wife kept saying, you never keep this up. You're always doing stupid shit like this and it never works. Why don't you just eat properly? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. And it worked amazingly well, you know, for about a month. And I like lost some weight. And she was like, oh, you're looking pretty good. But it won't last because you know what you like. You'll just get even fatter. And all that kind of stuff. She shouldn't talk like that. She's got an Irish accent. And it didn't last. And so then I wasn't training and I was it wasn't good. So anyway, so I decided like I needed to focus on less on work because I wasn't focusing on that either for some reason. For the last year, I think it's to do with having these kids, is that my daughter is like waking up. She's like three, keeps or four. She's waking up in the night and like, just like I'm hungry and all that kind of stuff. And I keep getting up. And yeah, it's been a funny. That last year was like a funny year. It wasn't a very productive year. So maybe that's why I've not really done a podcast. So I've not felt like I've had much to talk about. So now I'm just like one of these people just like whinges on about all their health issues. I don't actually have any health issues, but anyway, it's a new year. So I'm back training again. And I've decided I'm just going to, being a little bit ill, like I'm never ill. So being ill for like a month and having a bad tooth was like, oh my God, this is what illness feels like. This is what it feels like. So I was like, you know, happy wife, happy life, forget that. But it's like happy me, happy life, happy health is wealth and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, I'm just going to focus more on being healthy and feeling healthy and fit, being fit, rather than focusing on trying to work and not really getting anywhere with any kind of just fan. Like I didn't publish any books last year, so which for me, like, I like to try and publish a book every year. Like I have a book that I've like almost finished, and I have like several books that I've almost started. So I should have done a book, but it never. I'll do that this year. But even so, it's just like, what did you do? You didn't do any training. You didn't go and climb anything. You didn't publish anything. Like, what are you for? Like, it's like, you know, it's not. I did. You know, it's like pretty bad. So I started training again. But all I'm really doing is I'm building up my base, and so I'm just going on the treadmill. I just go to the treadmill because the gym near us. I've got lots of stuff to do, weighty stuff, but I'm building up my base. So I just go on the treadmill and I go up. And this is very highly technical, but write this down. So I go on the treadmill and I start at 6.6 kilometers an hour. And every 5 minutes I go up by whatever it is, a degree on the incline. So after an hour, you're on six degree angle, and then I have like 20 kilo. I carry 20 kilos, and I could go running, or I could do some other stuff. But that was an email coming in, and I could go running or do something like that. But I think I don't know. I seem to be surrounded by people who are always whinging and moaning about being injured all the time. I keep it quiet, and yeah, so you know that hard work kills horses. Maybe it's like an age thing, but a lot of people always seem to be like, you know, they're injured in some way, and they're always whinging on about it. So I think maybe at this time in life, I'm just gonna do this for a while, and then I'm gonna start doing some deadlifts, and then start doing some other things, and build up my base. And I think I've got my secret intention is probably to go back to Denali in the winter time, this next winter. And I wanted to go this winter actually, but it's a good job I didn't, because I wouldn't have been fit enough. So I think I kind of need an objective to focus on. And it's often the fitter you get, though, the fitter you get, the more, like Mike Tyson said something like, he didn't like to get really fit because then he started wanting to box again, and boxing probably wasn't very good for him, as in he'd end up with like a long-term brain injury or something. And I think maybe fitness is a bit like that. Like, the fitter you get, the more you start having all these like, oh, maybe I'll go and solo the Grand Jurass or something. So you just need to be like fit enough that you think you're shit, so you don't want to do anything too dangerous, but not so unfit that you're actually unhealthy. So if you know what I mean. So yeah, and the only thing I've been doing that's been like all fun is I've been doing a lot of kayaking in the dark, just to do with children and work and stuff, children and non-work. And so I go on the Corrib. The Corrib's like this massive, I think it's the biggest lake in Ireland, and I go out on there in the dark, basically. Like Billy Nomates, I'm always like turning up and it's like dark, and getting my kayak off my car, and there's people going like, what the fuck are you doing? And so I go out. It's quite good training actually, because there's some bits of the lake there aren't any lights at all, so there's no light at all. And been using, like, you basically have to use your GPS to sort of get around, and there's a lot of rocks in the lake, and it's also can get very rough. Like, a lot of people drown in the lake, because when you get big winds, stormy weather, like the shape of the, it's loads of lakes, one connected to the other, so there's a lot of fetch, so the waves are quite big, and you know, boats sink and people fall out of boats and stuff. So yeah, it's been quite interesting doing like navigating around a lake using a GPS, where you have to be quite kind of precise. And I got one of those Garmin, is an SE that's connected to your phone. And little things that you notice when you're kayaking, though, that the rain, if you have your phone in like a waterproof thing, is that the rain or the splashes from the water lands on the screen, and it just sort of disables it, makes it crash. So you can't really use your phone, and so you've, and, the Garmin SE is like very, very basic, the screen. It lasts for like days and days and days, the battery, but it's very, very basic. There's no map or anything. So yeah. So I did have like a Garmin eTrex something, 30X or something, but I'd not used it for ages, and the batteries had corroded inside and destroyed it, as batteries seem to always do. So which leads me on to the project I'm finishing, I'm 80% there, is this book of the Beyond, which is like 1,000 tips type book, but it's just for mountaineering and adventure and survival, bushcrafty, all that shite. And one of the tips in that book is actually always use Duracell / other brands are available lithium batteries, disposable lithium batteries in all your technology stuff, because they don't really corrode over time. They probably do corrode, but they don't seem to corrode. So if you put them in your GPS or your radio, climbing radio and stuff, and you leave them for like a year, you're not going to come back and it's all like dissolved and destroyed your gadgets and stuff. So yeah, a little tip for you there. So yeah, so that's been good. I had a few nights when I went out and it was like so foggy on the lake that I couldn't really see the front of my kayak. So it's kind of cool. But it's kind of cool to be able to go not very far from your house and have like, you know, like one of those like micro adventures that people talk about. Have a very little tiny thing where you're out on the out in the dark all by yourself, and it feels like adventurous. And you come back and you're all a bit tired and stuff, and feel like you've done something when you go home. So it's quite nice to do that. It's quite hard to do where we live. It's mainly like water around here, so it's hard to do anything but that. Let's have some of these questions, which I'm now gonna do from memory. Actually, I have one here. Let's have a look. I have to open my email again, so I have to turn it off so it won't beep. I'm just doing someone's blooming website. Like I did someone that she won't be listening to it. Like years and years ago, I went through a phase of like wanting to do websites for people for some reason. I think I just found it kind of interesting. And so I did one for a friend of mine, but it must have been like 10 years ago. But like, yeah, like you did it for free to begin with, but it just ends up being like it's always like, can you do this? Can you do that? And I'm always like, we're kind of busy, but I'll do that. So that was that person sending an email. So, never do anything good, never do anything free for anybody, just charge them money. Ideally, get them to do somebody else to do it. So, anyways, this is a question. So here we go. Hi, Andy. You've mentioned a few times in your books and articles that you're a fan of 30-centimeter open sling draws. That's quick draw to you and me. Actually, a funny story about draws is when I climbed the nose in the winter with Vanessa, my future wife to be, and my future ex-wife to be, and Sinead, my future wife to be, and Kian, who will see what happens with him. When we were coming down, so we were on the nose for like 10 days because none of them had ever done a big wall before. In fact, Kian had only ever climbed like one multi-pitch route in his life, and he was shit as well. Anyway, so I think after 10 days, we eventually got to the top of the nose because they were like doing, I wasn't leading anything. I was getting them to do everything themselves and like, you know, learning by doing. But anyway, when we got to the top, as we were walking down the trail, suddenly these like two speed climbers like caught us up. And one of them said to Sinead, oh, I think we've got your draws. Now, Sinead is a very smart person, but she can sometimes come across as very stupid. And she said she thought he meant her knickers, because draws mean knickers, don't they? And she was like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, we think we've got your draws. And she was like, oh my god. And she was looking all embarrassed and stuff. And then when they pulled out the quick draw, oh, how we laughed. Anyways, and she still doesn't understand. No, quick draws. Because everything seems to have some disadvantages, But how do you rack them? Because everything seems to have some disadvantages. A few of the options I've considered, just let them dangle quite long and a snag hazard. Triple the slings like Alpine draws, but extremely short and bulky. I've shortened mode. Double the sling, so a 15 centimeter sling. But if I set it up wrong, there is a chance the sling completely getting off the carabiner when extending. Clove hitching the rope carabiner so that one is fixed like a normal quick draw, and then it is about 25 centimeters long. But then, why not get a 25 centimeter quick draw? Good point. Secondly, in down, you show a locker draw with one locker and one snapper. Why don't you put a locker on both sides of the dog bone, that's another name for quick draw, and why on the rope side? Because what I've read so far, most unclipping seems to happen on the gear bolt side instead of the rope side carabiner. Thanks for your posts and info you put on the internet and answer these questions. Regards, Rick. So everybody's different. So this is not the way to do it. This is just one way to do it. Now, I think from memory, if you're doing like multi-pitch, like trad climbing, I think I would have, how many quick draws would I have? I'd have like two 10 centimeter ones, one on either side. So I'd like rack all my quick draws. So I'd have the same, like I'd usually have like two sets of cams and two sets of nuts, and I would have one set on either side of my harness. So I'd one set of, usually I'd have the nuts like spread out onto three or four carabiners, depending on what kind of climbing it was. But I'd have all the cams on either side, and then I would have all the quick draws on either side that were the same on both sides. So I'd always have like two 10 centimeter quick draws. Now the reason for a 10 centimeter quick draw, which is very short, which is what you'd use for like, you know, like sport climbing size quick draw, is I'm always aware that if you, like you could not have a 10 centimeter quick draw, but you always need variation in your quick draws, because you will eventually get to the point where if all your quick draws are like 15 centimeters, 17 centimeters, 20 centimeters, you'll get to a point where you clip something and the one of the carabiners, either the top one or bottom one, is leveraging over something like a, you know, like a lip of a piece of rock or an edge or something. So you want to be able to sort of either put something in there longer or something shorter. And I probably a 10 centimeter one is not that useful. But I think in my head, I still got that thing of when you first start climbing and you think like, oh, if I fall an extra 5 centimeters, it's going to be too scary. So I always have two 10 centimeter quick draws. And then I'll have another several 15 centimeter quick draws or 17 centimeter quick draws, because they'd be like Petzl-y type ones. So I probably have four of those on either side. So far that's, what's that, 10 quick draws. So I'd have four on either side. So I'd have eight 17 centimeter quick draws, two 10 centimeter quick draws. Then after that, I'd have some longer ones. So I'd have some 30 centimeter quick draws. Now the 30 centimeter quick draws, some of those are completely open, but they're you know, like an open loop, and some of them are sewn. So they've got an open loop at the end that's quite big. You can probably put your hand through it, but part of it sewn is like a half express one. And so the half express ones or the open ones, you could use a sling for this, but they're just good for lark's footing or clove hitching onto things like old pegs or, you know, that kind of thing. And and being open on one end makes them easier to clip into something else, to extend something else, like a quick draw. So if you got your 15 centimeter quick draw and you want to make it into a 47, you know, length quick draw, then it's kind of easier just to clip that in. If that, like, you could have sometimes, like, the carabiners are kind of one end's got like the rubber stopper anti-rotational thing on it, so they're quite hard to get on and off, and then the other half, sometimes that can be quite tight as well, so it's not that easy just to clip one quick draw into another, and you don't want to clip the carabiners into each other. I don't think it really matters, but you just don't want to do it. So I don't find them really a trip hazard. Maybe it depends what kind of harness you've got, where the racking is. If I was like winter climbing, I probably wouldn't use those. This is like rock climbing. I would probably just use alpine draws, and just, you know, double them, triple them all up, rather than that. Just so you don't want anything hanging down below your ass, basically, that's going to tangle in your crampons if you're squatting down. Like, if you're sometimes you might get on like a piece of ice and you're like going to like a squatting position, so you're kind of more comfortable in that position to do something, and then when you try and stand up, like, suddenly you find out your prussic loop or your long draw is like caught onto your crampon, and which is not good when both your hands are attached to ice axes and you can't let go. So it's like worst case scenario. So a lot of these things, you probably just go around with like all the same length quick draws, like Petzl 17 centimeter quick draws, and you never notice any difference. So it was just, I think when we went away for like 3 years just climbing and just rock climbing for 3 years, we just ended up always having, maybe we'd have like 17 quick draws or something, which sounds like quite a lot. But if you're doing like really long routes, like trad routes, you'll find you use them up quite quickly. Like if you're climbing at your not your limit, but you're climbing where you always want to put lots of gear in, then you need like a good variety of draws. You'll be running out of quick draws, and also you've got like quite a lot of, you've got a much bigger rack these days than you used to have in the past. Like in the past, you might have like two sets of nuts and one set of cams, but the cams would only go from like a half like fingertip size up to like a three. You probably wouldn't carry a 3.5 and a 4 usually, where now you've got like two sets of cams from like a black alien size all the way up to like might be carrying like a Camelot 4 or something. So you've got a lot more gear, and generally on like multi-pitch routes, you almost want to be extending every single piece of gear you put in, even if you've got like double ropes. So you like they are quite light quick draws, and you do end up dropping them as well. So, and on a big wall, you always want lots of 30 centimeter quick draws, because you just use them a lot to tie things off. I think technically your 30 centimeter quick draw, if you've got no carabiners, it's okay to like thread them through things. Right, I wouldn't lark's foot them through a nut, but you know if you like double them through like a wire. If you haven't got anything else, if you haven't got any quick carabiners to clip it into the wire, it's kind of handy. So yeah, just find them kind of handy in general. But you don't want millions and millions of them, because and you also you do need to keep the bottom carabiner something to stop it from spinning around, because they are more likely to spin around. So that's why the ones with the half sewn design are quite good. I think the ones I've got, like maybe like black diamond ones, and then basically it doesn't really matter, as long as if you've got like alpine draws, then you can do the same with an alpine draw. But it's just like unclipping a 30 centimeter quick draw is quicker than unclipping an alpine draw and then fiddling around trying to extend it out into a longer sling and things. So yeah. So as for the locker, yeah, you can have lockers on both ends. I think in my experience, so we'd always, again, in all those quick draws in your harness, we'd always have like two, generally. Depends on where you're climbing. You'd have two with the smallest, like Metolius screw gate on the rope end. And you'd have it, you don't always make sure it was like screwed up so tight, so you don't go to clip something and then go to put the rope in and it's like screwed up. Because generally a screw gate, if you want it screwed up, it's unscrewed. If you want it unscrewed, it's screwed up. So you could have it on both ends. But in my experience, the rope is always unclipped from the rope. The rope is always unclipped from the carabiner. Like it shouldn't do, but it does. Like if you clip the rope in the right direction in the right orientation, like the rope shouldn't unclip. But sometimes, like when you're directly above a piece of gear, you haven't. You know, the rope is like, you look down, it's like, that could, like, it's not so bad if you've got wide gate carabiners, but in the past when you had bent gate carabiners, you know, you'd look down, you'd be like, oh God, that looks like it's just going to like unclip itself. So really it's more of like psychological, the screw gate is more of a psychological thing than an actual thing. So if you're climbing in like in, I think in Namibia, there was like places where you were climbing and there was like one bolt and then you just have to like quest off up on this, like there's questing off a bolt where the rock is like amazing, like Tuolumne granite, where you could just kind of go wherever you want and you're not going to fall off. Like as long as you're confident, you just pad around wherever you go, you're not going to fall off. But when it's all like crunchy and gravelly and stuff, you definitely want to, you know, cross all your T's or whatever it is. So by just, you know, you got that one bolt or that one piece of gear that's good, you know, that's where you use your screw gate, because like psychologically it's like, that's a screw gate, it's not gonna, like it's a bit stronger than a normal carabiner, also the rope's not gonna come out, and it's more like psychological. Probably the same with the 30 centimeter quick draw, is that you by having like an armory, like a golf bag, I don't play golf, but you know, you got this armory of stuff, you got all your different cams and you got your all this kind of stuff, is that you're in your head it's like, I've got all the gear I need, and you know, away you go. So it's all about building up your confidence. Like sometimes you're like, oh no, where's my 10 centimeter quick draw gone, like I can't go up without my 10 centimeter quick draw. Or just, you know, little things like a lot of our totem cams are broken just from using them, like plastic triggers have snapped and the various things have snapped on them. And Vanessa's like, oh, I can't climb on them, they're not strong. And I'm like, no, they're completely strong still, but they're just, you know, they're just broken. So, that, you know, I'd like put tape on them and, you know, to get them to keep working. But Vanessa's like, oh no, they're not safe, I'm not climbing on them. So it is all psychological. Like you see people climbing on some like really, 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 really super, super old kit, you know, old friends and things. And you're like, do you know that sling is like 30 years old on that, you know, they've got like rainbow coloured slings on their wild country friends and stuff, and it's like, do you know how old that is? So some people just don't care. And you know, I once gave someone a rope of mine away because I thought it was too old and knackered. And then next time I climbed with him was about 10 years later, and that was the rope we had, and it was like 7.5 mil, and he was just using it by itself, and I was like seconding him, and I was just like, oh my God. Like, so yeah, some people don't think about it. So but I think, you know, for me it's all like your psychological kind of stuff. So anyway, so I hope that answered the question. Another question was, someone wrote, and it was something like, what have your views changed about food, like mountaineering food? And I guess they have in some ways. Like I think there's you you can divide food into, like mountaineering food, into your dehydrated food, you know, which is like improved like massively. And I've been on trips where that's all you had to eat for like months, like 2 months. That's all you had. You had a massive hold all just full of loads of dehydrated packets of food. And you would have that like morning lunch, when you're having lunch morning, and you know, you'd be having beef stroganoff for your breakfast, then you'd be having some monkfish casserole for your tea or something. And after 2 months of that, you kind of get a bit sick. Everyone gets sick of the various ones, and all the good ones disappear, and you're just left with all the same spaghetti bolognese that doesn't taste like spaghetti bolognese. So they have a place, and then you have like the old school mountaineering food, which is like mash powder, super noodles. What else would you have? I guess porridge, like instant porridge, stuff like that. And that stuff is really not great, in that it hasn't really got many calories in it, and it's also pretty poor quality food. I'd say that a lot of the dehydrated food is also pretty poor quality, but it has more calories. There's a really good account of how, like in the Vietnam War, the Australians, who were like really really amazing soldiers for various reasons, when they were fighting Vietnam, they basically always use these like British Army composite rations, where you'd get like a box, and there'd be like your tea, your milk, your sugar. You'd have a tin of curry, tin of, you know, some sausages. It was all like tins of stuff, stew, this kind of stuff. And you would, you know, you would heat it all up, and you would eat, and it tasted like food. Most of it tasted like food. Like when I was a kid, like my dad would have like, you know, he'd give you, if you went off walking, he'd just give you like some tins out of one of these compo pack things. But the Americans had like the sea rations, and like sea rations, the sea with a calica, they were like science's answer to, you know, like food which you could, you know, you could store for like 50 years and it wouldn't go off, and you could throw it out of helicopters and store it in really hot warehouses in the desert or in the jungle or in the Arctic. And it was, you know, and it had like, I think a box of sea rations was like 3,000 calories or something. It was enough calories for one soldier for one day or something. But the Australians absolutely detested these sea rations. And originally it was like, well, they're fighting in Vietnam, we'll just give them Australian rations because it's like logistically easier. But they absolutely hated them because they're too sweet, they were too salty, they didn't look like food. They had, you know, all these kind of names for things, and they didn't have any tea, which is like, oh my God, that's enough to cause like a mutiny. You know, tea, they had just had coffee, and they just found them like inedible. And it made them it resulted in like basically malnutrition, because the Australians just weren't eating this food because they found it awful. And it did lead to like some kind of minor mutiny where they were like getting them like the food they need is not just that'd be nice for them, like this is like very important, you know, this is like vital that they get their own food. So often they would not even eat the American food if that's all it was, and they would just wait until they could get supplied like their, basically it was like the British food. So a lot of the that kind of old school Alpine food is probably a little bit like that. Like for one, like you can eat like baby powder, baby like food, you know, dehydrated baby food or whatever. Yeah, you can usually eat it for like one meal or a whole route or something. But for me, I always found like I was like done with it. Like after I'd done one route with it, I just couldn't eat it. I just couldn't eat it again. And things like even like mashed potato powder, which, you know, are kind of nutritious-y, like easy to cook. And you could add things to it. You know, you could take like butter, cheese, and you can add things to it. But even so, like there's something about it. I just kind of like French people seem to be able to eat it and find it good, but. But I just couldn't do it. I'd probably now just go for like a Mick Fowler, like a Snickers bar, like just I'd probably rather eat something that I know I can eat and easily and doesn't need cooking than that. So like I'm a big fan of just like, you know, just like muesli. Just muesli with milk powder in a bag. So you just add cold water, not hot water. Ugh, that's disgusting. And just add hot cold water to it, and then you can eat out of a cup or something in your sleeping bag. Like for me, and I would eat that for breakfast and dinner probably. If you know, for lightweight food. And I'm sure I've said this before, but the Jarvin, the Swedish guy who sailed around the world a few times, and now he's like 85 and he's still like trying to sail around the world. He's trying to sail to New Zealand in like a homemade boat where you basically have to lay down in it because it's so small. Like when he was planning to sail to New Zealand, all he had was muesli and a tin of sardines a day. And he reckoned that was all that everything you needed basically in your nutritionally. And I probably had like fats and everything else. I had fruit in it, so you weren't going to get scurvy and things. So, and he said that people are basically so bored, they try and fill their days with with the variety, and you know, obsessed with food and what they're eating and what they're, you know, what's for tea and that kind of, because their lives are so boring. But if you're sailing to New Zealand in the, you know, across the South Atlantic and, you know, and across the Pacific, you probably have more on your mind than what's for tea and stuff. So yeah, so but on the other side is, again, I've probably said this before. When I went to Mount Kenya, we had flour, chickpeas, no, flour, lentils, and oil. Was that it? And rice. Was that it? Rice? Yeah, that's probably about right. Yeah. Or maybe we just had flour and lentils. I can't remember now. But we basically had it was very compact what we had, you know, like a big bag of flour, big bag of lentils, probably had rice as well. And so we made like chapatis using the flour, and then you made like a dal with the rice. You just put the rice and the lentils in together into the boiling water. And it just wasn't enough. There wasn't enough food, and I didn't really do any calculations. But do you know, people say like Sherpas, they'll just eat this like mountain of rice and dal and stuff. And the reason is like, I think it's just not very dense nutritionally. And to fuel up for mountaineering, you have to eat like an immense amount of it to do it. Where pasta seems to be more dense in the, so when we went around Mount Kenya, went to this hut, Kenya mountaineering hut, and there was like nobody there, but there was all this like food left behind. And oh my god, we just like, you're just like looking for anything really calorific, because you're just kind of even after like for 3 or 4 days of living on like lentils and rice, you just like, you didn't feel hungry, but I think your body was just like missing out on something. And god, we got in there, and there was like some pasta, and we cooked this pasta up. And god, it like tasted amazing, just like raw, not raw pasta, but just like pasta with nothing on it, just like tasted amazing. So I think the next trip I went on, I think I would prioritize like a diet, like high fat, high like a basic pasta, spaghetti. With oil, with some kind of fat, and a few other things. So like I don't know what it's called, but there's a meal, and it's basically you boil your pasta, and then you put your cheese on the pasta, then you put oil on it, then you put some, you know, put some spices on. You can put like some chili flakes and some salt, so put some pepper on it, whatever. It's like a very, very simple, it's very, very simple to make. Yes, you're going to have to use like a little bit more fuel than if you just have like super noodles. But the quality of the nutrition, even though pasta's not going to be amazing, but the quality and the density of calories is going to be like much, much greater from having like some pasta with olive oil and some cheese or whatever. And, you know, for carrying like a little bit of extra food, like you wouldn't do this if you were like, you know, on the Grand Jurass or something, but you would do it if you're walking up to the Grand Jurass and you're going to have some food, you know, before you set off or like on a longer expedition. And I guess like learning all those other things. So like having, you know, like things like if you're going somewhere cold, like, you know, the classic old school things of like cheese and sausage and, you know, the old Alpine kind of things are great, like crackers and, you know, all that kind of stuff. They are actually really, really good. Like we kind of dismiss how people used to do things. I'm not going so far as having like pemmican or something, which is just like fat, like a lot of, whereas the Russians have like pig fat, you know, wrapped up in something, you know, like but I think some of those old school ways of eating are probably like really good. Like I know I've said before, when we went to Denali, we like cooked up like a huge batch of bacon, and we poured all the fat into a plastic bag, and like that was amazing. Like just like reheat the bacon because it was Baltically cold, so the bacon just was frozen straight away. But just reheating the bacon in the pan, the frying pan, and put it into a bagel, like heat the bagel up as well, put it in a bagel, and you know, it was like amazing. And then adding the fat into other meals, so even when you're having like your dehydrated food, you've got this big bag of fat basically. Like when I was a kid, that's what you had. You didn't have olive oil and sunflower oil, you just had this like thing in the fridge which was just like a ball of fat, which is what your mum got from like roasting some beef or something. You just keep all the fat, so when you fried something like an egg or something, you just get a spoonful of the fat. And it turns out like that was like way healthier. Like margarine is like fucking poison, and so is most of that stuff you put in food these days. So yeah, so it's a that's kind of the sad thing, is that when you were, so I think in the Second World War, the only food, one of the only foods that wasn't rationed was fish and chips. Now, fish and chips then was made from tallow. I mean, the oil was tallow, which is like beef fat. And thinking again, is like as a kid, like everyone ate like so much fish and chips. Where when I grew up in Hull, because it was like a fishing city, and nobody was fat, and it was because there was no like all these like different oils and stuff. So yeah, so it's interesting. So yeah, so I think I'd always think about the fat content, like the butter, like put anything with if it's not going to be super cold, you just have like an Nalgene bottle, small one, big one, medium size one, of olive oil or some kind of good quality oil, and just pour that into food, and that'll give you like a huge boost of calories. But also I think it also just is good for your brain as well. I think it's just good for your morale. Is to add fat. This like obsession we have with fat is really detrimental. I think my kids have just come back from swimming. They're going to open the door in a second and go, "Dad, da, 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 da." So yeah, I did have another question about helmets, but now they're back. That means I can go and put my kayak on the top of the car and head off into the unknown. Maybe I'll never come back and this will be my last podcast, but if it is, I do apologize for being so slack. I have missed you all, you know, all of you people wherever you are, and I'm sure you've got lots to talk about, the news, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think recently I saw this video, and it was Brendan Gleeson. You know, Brendan Gleeson is the actor. And he was basically saying how everyone's just going off all the time, but no one's got any solutions for anything. And I was like, yeah, I think I'm gonna take that. I'm just gonna not say anything. I'm just gonna keep. Sometimes I might say something, but I'm just gonna keep only in a comment, just to be, you know. And so it's funny. I wonder if you have to train yourself to stay your hand. Do you know what I mean? Like if you're like in an old, in Witcher or one of these like Sword and the Sorcery things, like everyone, every time you see something you don't like, you like pull out your sword and you chop their heads off or something. And like that Roald Dahl, the Roald Dahl story. Anyway, but you, so you have to train yourself to stay your hand. So I'm doing, I'm staying my hand. So whenever you see something, you have this like little thought about it. And you're like, I could share my thought about this. My, but it's like, who cares? Who really cares? So I've been staying my hand for a while, which is probably a form of like giving in. But is it? I don't know. Is it giving in? I don't really know. I have to think about it. But I think the alternative is probably something else just equally as bad. I think I just need to, you know, just get my kayak and just like head off into the mist. Never seen again. Anyway, so anybody got any questions that I can put into a folder and remember till next time, then send them in, and I shall promise to do another podcast soon. I'm sorry if there's any like clicking or lip smacking or anything like that on this podcast. I'm probably out of practice with these kind of things, but you know, until next time, stay safe.